From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. It's Politics Day here on The Exchange. Last night, President Obama arrived in Iowa. In our first half hour, we'll discuss the president's visit and backyard talk in the Des Moines neighborhood of Beaverdale this morning. IPR's Janine Beck was with the president this morning and will join us. We'll find out why Obama's in Iowa and what he hopes to accomplish. And the battle over retaining three Iowa Supreme Court justices. Joining us this hour, political analysts Dennis Goldford and Rachel Caulfield of Drake University and Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College. Our discussion starts right after this news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. President Barack Obama is back in Iowa, the birthplace of his political triumph. His victory in the January 08 Iowa caucus put him on the path to the Democratic presidential nomination, and he carried our state comfortably that November against Republican John McCain. Now, nearly 2 years into his term, Obama is using Iowa as a venue to try to avert a Republican landslide in the midterm elections. He flew into Des Moines last night. This morning, the site of his latest in a series of backyard discussions with voters was the Beaverdale neighborhood in Des Moines at the home of Jeff and Sandy Club. Iowa Public Radio's Janine Beck was there to cover the event that ended literally minutes ago. She couldn't get back to our studios at Iowa Public Radio in Des Moines, so she's joining us by cell phone. Janine Beck, good afternoon to you.
Thanks. I'm still at the event. In fact, the president, I believe, may be leaving. We're not allowed to leave until he does, but we can hear the neighborhood erupting in cheers out front of the house, so we think that he's done like he did before the event, which is walk over and greet some of the neighbors and meet some of the local people.
So the president is actually still there as you speak?
He is, or he may be pulling away as we speak, but yes, he after speaking, spent about 15 minutes shaking hands with every single person in the backyard audience and making sure that he spent a few minutes with them taking pictures, those kinds of things. So he was here a length of time.
Now, we wanted to play a couple cuts from his discussion. It lasted, what, the good part of an hour, didn't it?
It did. And he started speaking, about 10 minutes and then opened it up to questions.
Mm-hmm. We want to play a couple cuts in just a minute, but I want to have you expand a little bit on the atmosphere there and also explain why do you think this particular neighborhood and who are Jeff and Sandy Club?
Well, I have not been able to ascertain essentially why the Beaverdale neighborhood, except possibly because it's an older neighborhood, it's a middle-class neighborhood, it's a well-known neighborhood in Des Moines. He's been here before on the campaign trail. He came to a festival here, celebrated one of his daughter's birthdays here, so he's familiar with it. Jeff and Sandy Club, Jeff is a middle school social studies teacher at the nearby Holy Catholic Trinity School in the neighborhood, and Sandy Hatfield Club is the athletic director at Drake University. So the crowd here was really a mix of Drake friends, family, former faculty, current faculty, also Beaverdale residents, and then we had pastors here from the Holy Catholic Trinity Church and congregation members at the church here. So it was really actually their friends and neighbors. When you introduced yourself from the media and asked how do you know them, they did know them. Most of these were their friends and neighbors, a couple handpicked by the White House Democratic supporters, but the majority were friends of this couple.
Okay, Janine Beck, stay on the line. We want to listen to a couple things that the president had to say in his interaction earlier today in the Beaverdale neighborhood in Des Moines. Here's a little audio from the president. A woman in the audience said her 24-year-old son had campaigned hard for President Obama's message of hope back in 2008, but had recently graduated with honors from Simpson College, had been unable to find a job. She wanted to know what message of hope he would give to young people today. The president said recent graduates were facing the toughest economic time since the Great Depression, but the economy is growing and things look good for the future.
And then finally, what I'd tell your son is that we're trying to make some tough decisions now so that by the time he has his own son or daughter, that we are back to number one in research and development, back to number one in the proportion of college graduates, back to number one in terms of innovation and entrepreneurship, that we have succeeded in creating a competitive America that will ensure this 21st century is the American century just like the 20th century was. But it's going to take some time. And so the main message I have to young people, in some ways this generation may be less fixed on immediate gratification than our generation was, partly because they've seen how some hardship in their own families and in their own careers.
President Obama speaking earlier today in a backyard in the Beaverdale neighborhood of Des Moines. Janine Beck is with us. I want to mention before we go back to Janine that this entire discussion that the president led in this Des Moines neighborhood will be broadcast right here on Iowa Public Radio's Studio One stream beginning at 2 this afternoon. So at 2 o'clock, President Obama's entire backyard discussion from earlier today in Des Moines. Now, Janine, were there a lot of sort of skeptical probing questions that were posed to the president, some hardball questions?
There were. These people, supporters or not, and not everyone was, were concerned about the economy and concerned about, that was one of two questions, basically talking about people looking for work, looking for jobs. The pastor of the church asked about that as well and said, what am I to tell my congregation when one of the spouses is laid off and trying to put food on the table? And the same message you just heard in that cut you played about patience was something he reiterated throughout this, saying, look, when we came in, we inherited tough economic times. We're doing our best, but it's not going to change overnight, and you have to be patient.
Mm-hmm. One of the other facets... Go ahead, Janine.
Well, I was just going to mention a couple of the other tough questions that were posed to him. Somebody asked about the health care reform, very skeptical of his legislation and concerned that illegal immigrants are getting free health care. He explained that his plan doesn't change anything about the way hospitals currently treat undocumented workers. Many would treat them uncompensated. He said this doesn't impact that in the least. He was asked about the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and the toll that's taking on the budget and how soon can we expect revenues to be, directed elsewhere. So even those that you could tell supported him were asking tough questions today.
Okay. And also a small business owner asked President Obama why he considered letting the Bush tax cuts expire instead of continuing them to help spur job creation. President Obama replied that the businessman had not seen his tax increased under the Obama administration and that he wants to keep taxes low for small businesses, but wants to do it without driving up the deficit.
Finding $700 billion is not easy. And when we borrow $700 billion, we're adding to our deficit and debt, and then we've got to pay interest to China or whoever else is willing to buy our debt. So these are the choices. So it's not that, when it comes to small businesses or big businesses that I have any interest in raising taxes. I'd like to keep taxes low so that you can create more jobs. But I also have to make sure that we are paying our bills and that we're not putting off debt for the future generation. And that's what happened in the Bush tax cuts.
President Obama speaking earlier today in Des Moines. His speech, his backyard discussion will be broadcast here on Iowa Public Radio on this frequency beginning at 2 o'clock this afternoon if you care to hear the entire discussion. Janine Beck, in winding up here, do you think in observing the backyard observers, questioners of the president, that minds were changed, that skeptics were turned into fans or at least swayed in some way by the president's talk?
Let me put it this way. I think they were charmed. I don't know if they were persuaded on their individual questions. The small businessman, that David Greenspan, who you just played a cut of, you played the president's reaction to him afterwards. I spoke to him. He still believes that they should not increase taxes on the 2%, wealthiest 2%, which includes small businesses like his. I also saw a woman that had asked a tough question about health care for her mother, and afterwards the president greeted her, and we could all sort of watch the interaction, and he said, well, did I answer your question? And she said, sort of. And so, I think he's very charismatic, so they were tickled to meet him, but whether they were won over is another question.
Okay, Janine Beck, Iowa Public Radio's Janine Beck, who covered the president in Des Moines this afternoon. It began this morning. She's still at the site of the event. Can you tell if the president's left yet?
He has, because people are tearing down and we're allowed to leave.
Okay.
So that means he's gone.
Okay. Janine Beck, good luck getting out of the security there. And thank you very much for your views. And we look forward to hearing your reports here on Iowa Public Radio later in the day.
Thanks, Ben.
Janine Beck with us, and now we want to invite some political analysts for this Wednesday, our politics day here on The Exchange, to talk initially about President Obama's backyard discussion, his visit to Iowa. Joining us, Dennis Goldford, professor of politics in the Department of Politics and International Relations at Drake University, and also Wayne Moyer is with us, professor of political science at Grinnell College. Professors, welcome to our discussion.
Thank you.
Let me start with you, Professor Moyer. What was President Obama trying to achieve with not only this backyard discussion? This is one of four that he's held in four different states. What is he trying to do here?
Well, I think there's several things. I think, first of all, he's trying to mobilize his base. I think, secondly, he's trying to emphasize that his economic policies are actually improving the economic situation and will create jobs. And third, I think he's trying to eliminate some misconceptions about himself. For instance, the feeling among so many people that he's still a Muslim. And these kinds of things, I think he's trying to get people to really understand that he, mm-hmm. one of his appearances yesterday, that he's really a Christian.
Mm-hmm. And he made that point yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Now, on the economic front, Professor Goldford, what happened if our perceptions don't match what is actually happening in the economy? What happened to the message? Who took over the message, and when did that happen?
The president, in a way, I think during the caucuses and during the primary season for the nomination, campaigned, or he tried to campaign from a position that I would call above politics. That is, he campaigned against politics as usual, against partisanship. The problem with that is it'll come back and bite you in the rear end if you ignore partisanship. And that's what happened in the spring of 2009 when the town hall meetings began. The tremendous vitriol directed at Washington in general, the administration in particular, even though it came principally from Republicans who were anxious about the new administration, it set the tone that was picked up by cable TV and talk radio. He never really responded to that and allowed them to dominate the debate, and they took over the debate.
Okay, so now he's trying to play a game of catch-up.
It is, and that's hard to play catch-up in this particular case. The movie's already well underway. Is it still enough time in the movie for him to play catch-up? That's the question.
I want to reach out to our listeners to see if we have some callers who'd like to join our conversation. Did you support Obama in 2008? Have your feelings about him changed? Did this backyard discussion change your feelings, your thoughts about President Obama and his time in office nearly 2 years? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org, our email. So I'm looking at the four states, including Iowa, that President Obama has been visiting over the last few days. I think he's probably on his way to the airport now, in the Des Moines airport, on his way to Virginia, I believe, in addition to Iowa and Virginia, New Mexico, Wisconsin. Can you decipher why these four states would be picked out for backyard discussions and why this particular format? Why do you have a backyard discussion instead of being in an arena where perhaps you can get to more people? To have you see Professor Goldford.
He's been criticized as having a kind of Dr. Spock or Mr. Spock-like personality, emotionless. And if there's anything the American people want is the sense that their representatives, be they president, senator, or congressman, understand who they are. A big thing that hurt the first President Bush during his campaign for re-election in 1992 was the famous incident, apocryphal or not, but we think it's true, when he was in a grocery store and he had never seen a scanner. And what that said to people was he was completely out of touch with the way ordinary people live. And that's been the charge, rightly or wrongly, against this president that he's trying to overcome.
New Iowa poll numbers out on the president in today's Des Moines Register. President's overall job approval rating, 45%. That's one point lower than the February poll. His disapproval number has hit 50% for the first time, 3 points lower than in February. Relatively high marks for foreign relations, including the job he's doing in the fight on terrorism. So what do you take away from these poll numbers and the trends that you're seeing in the popularity of the president on various avenues, various aspects? Well, Professor Moyer.
What I think, first of all, is the public still thinks he hasn't done enough in terms of the economy. And I think he's trying to reverse that feeling, and he's really concerned about the plight of people. And by these speaking to small audiences, he can get the message across that he's really concerned about the people who are out of work. And it gets to what Professor Goldford was saying, his remoteness from the public and trying to correct that.
And if you saw any of this, it was broadcast on Iowa Public Television, and I watched it online. President Obama, no tie, shirt sleeves rolled up, very casually strolling around this backyard in Des Moines. As you mentioned, only 36% approve of the way he's handling the economy. 59% disapprove of his handling of the economy. So is this the pivotal issue for the midterm elections, if not for the 2012 election?
It certainly is. And interestingly, I think the same thing has happened to the administration and to the Democrats generally as happened to the Republicans after the 2004 election. In other words, there's been a slight decline of support for the president among Democrats. They've been discouraged or disappointed in what he's failed to accomplish in their particular view. Republicans have never liked this president, but just as occurred with President Bush and the Republicans in 06 and 08, the bottom's dropping out for the president among independents. They're the ones who value competence more than ideology. The car may be in the ditch. They may believe the Republicans drove the car into the ditch, but they believe this administration hasn't yet gotten the car out of the ditch, and they're getting impatient.
Okay, you can join our discussion, 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Dennis Goldford with us, along with Wayne Moyer, two political scientists at Drake University, Professor Goldford and Professor Moyer at Grinnell College. And let's go to our first caller. Mary is joining us from Des Moines. Good afternoon, Mary. Welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you. I'm first.
Mary, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now. What's on your mind, Mary, as you listen to this discussion about President Obama's visit?
Well, I am an independent, and so maybe it kind of plays into just your last comment there, but I am an independent. I am in the financial services industry, and I did not vote for Obama. But I do approve of what he's doing. And I think that for him to be getting the blame of where we are right now is a failure for people to understand where we would have been had he not carried through with the plan that Bush put in place and Bernanke supported. And because they can't see where we would have been without those things, which would have been much worse than where we are now, they want to blame him for not being farther along, when I know for a fact that many, many economists in 2008 said we were staring into a precipice, and that it was abysmal. We had the real possibility of having severe, severe, severe problems. And the fact that we're here looking at the market moving forward, even though it's slowly, we should be celebrating and praising instead of criticizing.
And go ahead, Mary. Sorry.
If the people aren't doing that, it's a failure to, they don't understand. And they're listening to the sound bites. And I think if people listen to the advertisements on TV and think that those people are telling them what happening from a political standpoint, then they should be going out and buying Crest toothpaste and think that they're going to get the most beautiful person in the world to marry them. Not true, not going to happen.
Mary, interesting. Yeah, I want to get a reaction from our political scientists. This is very interesting. Mary, a financial analyst based in Des Moines, not someone who voted for Obama in 2008, now listening to her, it's as if she had, and she was very satisfied. Professor Moyer, what do you make of this opinion, which is contrary, actually, to what we're hearing in the mainstream media?
Well, I personally agree with her, but I think what's going on, when the economy is down and people are frustrated, there's a very natural tendency to attribute the problem to the president, or at least that the president isn't taking care of the problem. You want somebody who can do something about it, and the president is the top person. And so when presidents take credit when the economy is going well, it's not surprising they don't. They also take the blame.
Mm-hmm. How much really leverage does the president have in good times and bad over the economy, Professor Goldberg?
Relatively little. It's a classic study known to political scientists. Famously, Harry Truman said to an aide before Eisenhower became president, Ike's going to come in after his army experience and give an order and expect it to be carried out, and it won't be. Presidents don't have the power to command. All they have is the power to persuade. They have to work with many people, starting with Congress, who don't owe him their jobs. So he's got to engage constantly in persuasion, and you can't just say, well, this is right, and if you don't see it, you're foolish. You've got to persuade. You've got to schmooze, if you will. And that's where the president perhaps has not done what he should have done.
We've got two or three minutes left before we have to take a break in this edition of The Exchange, and I want to go to a caller before we do that. Suzanne is with us from Grinnell. Suzanne, good afternoon. Welcome to The Exchange.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I voted for Obama, and I guess in a sense, I didn't have high hopes because I thought that his attitude of bipartisanship and being above the fray was delusional, because historically we've always won battles against problems in the environment or human rights through battles. And so I didn't know quite how he would ever accomplish that. But I have been disappointed by the fact that he hasn't taken the bully pulpit, and he hasn't I knew he got a lot of funding from the financial sector, but not breaking up banks was disappointing. And I guess I feel sad that he has let the right dominate the conversation and kind of be on the defensive all the time because he doesn't want to irritate anybody.
Now, Suzanne, he's taken a different tact here in recent weeks. Are you'd call it the bully pulpit, taking back the bully pulpit. Do you feel that the President Obama that we've been seeing in the last few weeks has the potential to re-energize his former base or his people?
You know, I guess it depends upon how forceful and antagonistic, I mean, I don't want to say antagonistic, but how much he's willing to risk making people mad.
Okay, we want to get a quick comment before you. Suzanne, thank you for your comment. I want to get a quick comment from our political analysts here. We have just about a minute left, and I want to ask, as we go into this break, what chances does he have to turn this around before the midterm elections? Professor Moyer.
I think it's going to be very hard to turn it around with so little time, and also with so many people already having voted. In early voting.
The voting is, we have to remember, it's already begun, hasn't it?
And so I think it'll be hard. Now, most of those who have voted are Democrats, at least in this area, but I think it's still going to be late.
Professor Goldberg, we have a few seconds before we go to a break.
There's an old phrase that applies. You get only one chance to make a first impression.
Okay. We'll see if that holds true. If you'd like to join our conversation, join us in the second half hour. We're going to go away just a few minutes. 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org is our email. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Governor Culver's problems in the polls. He was the first out there on the tarmac last night to greet President Obama when he landed at the Des Moines airport. We'll talk about that when we come back. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and earlier in the hour, talking on Politics Day here on The Exchange, discussing President Obama's visit to Iowa, his economic discussion at a backyard event just a couple of hours ago in the Beaverdale neighborhood of Des Moines. We've been analyzing that this week. If you'd like to listen to that discussion that President Obama had with regular folk in the Beaverdale neighborhood of Des Moines, we're going to be broadcasting that right here on Iowa Public Radio in just over an hour, beginning at 2 o'clock here on Iowa Public Radio. Joining us for this hour, Dennis Goldford, professor of politics in the Department of Politics and International Relations at Drake University, and Wayne Moyer, professor of political science at Grinnell College. Hopefully, a little later in the hour, Rachel Caulfield, also a professor at Drake, will join us. She was at the Obama event. Difficult and hard to predict sometimes how to get out of security and into an Iowa Public Radio studio, we're finding out, but perhaps she will be joining us a little later in the hour. Well, Governor Culver greeted the president with a warm hug last night at the Des Moines airport, and that can't hurt this the embattled Democrats like Governor Chet Culver, whose job approval in Iowa is 35%. That's quite a bit worse than the president's. I want to turn to my political analysts and ask how Governor Culver got in this situation. The poor poll numbers that he's showing, only 35% approval. Professor Goldford, what's behind that 4 years ago after being elected in 2006?
Part of it, of course, is the state economy, like the national economy. That's troublesome for any Democratic incumbent, Democrats, because they're the ones who are the controlling majority parties, both at the Iowa legislature and governor's mansion, as well as nationally. But also because there's a perception on the part of people that the governor allowed to develop that he's not been a strong leader. And particularly in difficult times, people want to have a sense that they do have a strong leader who knows what's going on.
So what's that mean, a strong leader?
Well,
break that down a little bit.
Consider the poll in the Des Moines Register suggested that the public, by and large, tends to agree with a lot of the issue positions the governor has taken in terms of dealing with economic and other matters. It's a personal repudiation of him, the low approval ratings, that they just don't think he's been out in front of things. He's been relatively invisible. He does show up in various venues for flood relief and things like that. But many reporters I've talked to said he just doesn't talk to the press.
Hmm. Professor Moyer, what's your take on these poll numbers for the governor?
Some of it does come from the overall national situation and the general sense that the Democratic Party is to blame for the inability to deal with the problems, even though they develop economic problems, even though they developed in a Republican administration originally. Mm-hmm. So I think it's not all Iowa and it's not all Culver himself.
Now, if Culver was ahead in the polls, we would be talking about, well, of course he's ahead in the polls because it's the power of the incumbency. So let's trot that out and have you shoot it down. Well, why doesn't he have any power of incumbency here?
Because he's running against another incumbent. Mm-hmm. In other words, essentially, yeah. When the incumbent has an advantage, the incumbent has name recognition, has got experience. The challenger tends to have neither, and the challenger doesn't have any money behind him or her. In this particular case, running against a four-term governor with money behind him, with statewide name recognition, and with that experience, it's as if we were running one incumbent against another. So that washes out that incumbent's advantage.
Now, earlier this week, the National Rifle Association, the NRA, urged all gun owners and hunters in Iowa to vote for Chet Culver, the Democrat. Monday's announcement that the group backs Culver over Republican Terry Branstad. Well, it stands out, doesn't it? Because the group's Political Action Committee doesn't wade into every governor's race and rarely endorses a Democrat. Why in this case, Professor Moyer?
I'm not at all sure that this is very helpful. Governor Culver, I think it's not helpful in terms of activating his liberal base, many of whom I think are not very happy with the National Rifle Association. I don't know how many Republicans or independents who would otherwise not have voted for Culver will vote for Culver as a result of this endorsement. So I have a feeling it's an overall negative.
Mm. Will this endorsement in any way have a potential of swaying the pro-gun voters, traditionally conservative or Republican voters, over to the Culver camp from Branstad?
Well, as Professor Moyer said, that's probably not very likely. I mean, labor unions, for example, almost always endorse pretty consistently Democrats. But as we've seen since the Reagan years, the rank and file don't necessarily follow what the leadership suggests by way of an endorsement. And that may well be the case here with the NRA. Remember, as an interest group, the NRA is more concerned with policy than with personnel. They generally would prefer Republicans in office because they find them more sympathetic. But when push comes to shove, they're concerned that their particular issues and their particular programs are acted upon. That's more important to them than who the particular political party might be.
Okay, so here's what does Governor Culver need to do now between now and November 2nd to get back in the game, at least if the polls are correct.
Pray a lot.
Pardon me?
Pray a lot.
Pray a lot. Okay, well, what else could he do, Professor Boyd?
Well, I think he's got to be very positive about things that he wants to do, things that need to get done, and take sort of a strong, dynamic, positive stance about the future.
Okay, and walking into our studio here at Iowa Public Radio in Des Moines, she got out of the security. Rachel Caulfield is with us, associate professor in the Department of Politics and International Relations at Drake. And this morning she was witness to a backyard discussion with President Obama in the Beaverdale neighborhood here in Des Moines. Welcome to you, Professor Caulfield.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Thanks for your patience.
Well, it's great to have you, making it before the end of the hour. What did you witness this morning that jumped out at you?
Well, it was a small event and very good neighborhood feel. The president came, gave some brief remarks, took about six questions, ranging from the loss of manufacturing jobs in Iowa to the costs of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and what he's doing about that. He is, as ever, cool and collected.
he seemed at ease. I watched a little bit of this video streaming online, and he seems at ease, shirt sleeves rolled up, no tie. And did he seem to quell the concerns, answer the concerns of the audience, at least that was there?
Well, I think he did. I think he had a particularly interesting – he had a couple of particularly interesting exchanges with some people who asked questions, one about health care, one about tax breaks and small businesses, or the extension of the Bush tax cuts and the state of small business. And in both cases, he seemed mildly surprised to be getting some of the critique that he was getting. So I think it's probably good for him to get out among average Americans and understand that maybe he can do a better job talking about his policies and his vision and what he's been able to accomplish. So it was an interesting exchange on that front.
You know, when we talk about the critical questions that President Obama received, we remember the Bush administration, George W. Bush administration, and he was often criticized for the very choreographed public appearances that he gave. Now, are we correct in saying that this is a different approach to meeting the public, to allowing critical questions? Do you, as political analysts, see a difference here between President Obama and George W. Bush, Professor Moyer?
I think he's trying to make it that way. I mean, the sense in the paper this morning that the people who were hosting the event actually got to pick the people who were coming to the event rather than it being carefully these people being carefully selected by the president's office. So I think he's trying to get that impression across and perhaps actually to be doing it.
Okay. Let's move on to another topic that's in the Politics Wednesday here on The Exchange. Want to mention again as we wrap up our discussion about President Obama's backyard discussion. It will be broadcast in just over an hour here on Iowa Public Radio beginning at 2 p.m. President Obama's backyard discussion in Des Moines this morning. You can hear it in its entirety. We played a couple clips earlier in the hour. It's in entirety at 2 o'clock here on Iowa Public Radio. Now, an effort is underway by two of Iowa's former lieutenant governors, one a Democrat, one a Republican, to retain three Iowa Supreme Court justices. Democrat Sally Peterson, teaming up with Republican Joy Corning, pushing back against an effort by former Republican gubernatorial candidate Bob Vanderplaats to oust the justices in November. And Rachel Caulfield, set the scene. We want to listen to a clip by this ad, by this group, in just a moment. But tell us, there are three of these nine judges on the Iowa Supreme Court up for attention. Describe the system in which we operate, in which we live. Why are these people up for retention?
Well, we have what we call a merit selection process here in Iowa, where a nominating commission that's composed of citizens and lawyers, equal numbers, they have an opportunity to review applicants for the bench. They make recommendations to the governor. The governor then has the power to appoint one of the recommended individuals. And then once that judge has been seated on the bench and served for a period of time, the voters go to the polls and they vote a simple yes or no. Shall this judge be retained in office? So,
okay. So these three judges are up for this retention vote, and former Republican gubernatorial candidate Bob Vanderplaats is leading the charge to oust these three. And here's an ad by the group that he leads. This is the ad that's running by the group Iowa for Freedom.
Activist judges on Iowa's Supreme Court have become political, ignoring the will of voters and imposing same-sex marriage on Iowa. Liberal, out-of-control judges ignoring our traditional values and legislating from the bench, imposing their own values on Iowa. If they can usurp the will of voters and redefine marriage, what will they do to other long-established Iowa traditions and rights? Three of these judges are now on the November ballot. Send them a message. Vote no on retention of Supreme Court justices.
Okay, Rachel Caulfield, Professor Caulfield, what do you make of the claims made in this clip that we just heard, this ad?
Well, there are so many claims. They're kind of all packed into one. Clearly, this is a group that has a problem with the Varnum decision in particular, the same-sex marriage case here in Iowa. And so there are a couple things, I think, that are wrapped up in the very quick discussion of Varnum in the ad. The first is this notion of activist judges, which is one of those terms that often gets thrown around a lot, but it's, in terms of its meaning is unclear, I think, at best. But, you know, the group is trying to, and I should note that this is a group that's funded almost entirely by two out-of-state national interest groups, the American Family Association and the National Organization for Marriage. And they've put a lot of money into this ad. They're hoping to make Iowa kind of a hot spot to demonstrate that judges need to follow their agenda. And so by, you know, trying to oust these judges, they're trying to send a signal not just to Iowa judges, but to judges around the country. Having said that, the implication that the Varnum decision tells us that the court's going to start treading on any number of other treasured values of Iowans, again, it kind of extrapolates in a way that
we're on a slippery slope.
Yeah, it's both unclear. It's clearly politically polarizing, and the images and the claims that have been made that the same kind of thing could happen to Second Amendment rights. And I would just note, in the case of Second Amendment rights, there's a key difference, and that is that there's a Second Amendment. There's a well-established body of precedent regarding gun rights that simply didn't exist in the case of gay marriage.
Okay, I want to go to our other political analyst, Rachel Caulfield there, Dennis Goldford with us also in the studio, Wayne Moyer, and let's get your observations on...
Just on this issue of rights, and it's and the publicity about the court taking away rights. One of the things about rights is that's sort of basic to the Constitution is that momentary bursts of public opinion should not be allowed to overtake what the law or the Constitution is. And the public opinion cannot be accounted for on the short term to protect rights.
Mm-hmm.
So the court's job is to protect rights.
So the people who brought together our Constitution in Iowa had this in mind, that the momentary flourishes in the political minds of the state should not influence the judiciary.
That's what it means to have an independent judiciary. That's what it means to have a constitution. The ad uses the phrase or accuses the justices of, quote, ignoring the will of voters, unquote. That's not the purpose of the judiciary, to act in accordance with the will of the voters. Our elected representatives, the governor in this case, the state assembly, the senators and representatives, they are representing the will of voters. The judiciary's job is to represent the law, not the will of the voters, or at best, the will of the voters as embodied not in the contemporary majority, but as embodied in the state law and constitution.
Here's an email from Paula in Tipton listening to our program. You can email us at the exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Also, reach us by phone this hour, 1-866-780-9100. This email from Paula in Tipton, she writes, the justices have stripped rural Iowa of any voice in assigning judicial assets. Rural court personnel continually have their jobs reassigned to urban Iowa. The justices have used their budget to build an enormous and cumbersome bureaucracy in Des Moines. The legislature has left us no alternative but to oust these incompetent managers from office. Rachel Caulfield, what do you make of Paula's claims in this email from Tipton?
Well, clearly the Iowa judicial branch is suffering through a budget crunch the same way pretty much every justice system across the country is suffering through a budget crunch. The judicial branch, not just the Supreme Court, but the judicial branch writ large, has a responsibility to run a bureaucracy as efficiently and effectively as possible. And in order to do that, they have shifted resources. There's no question about that. I would say this is a question of underfunding of the judicial branch more so than incompetent management by the Supreme Court justices.
Mm-hmm. What are you seeing out there as far as indications of whether this campaign by former gubernatorial candidate Bob Vanderplaats is to oust these justices, to unseat them, is resonating? Is it resonating with enough voters, or can't we tell until November 2nd when we get those results? Professor Moyer, do we know, have any indications of whether this is resonating?
I don't have any indications. What my fear would be that a lot of people don't pay very much attention to the judge retention questions and may not vote on it at all. And those that do want to remove the judges may be voting, mm-hmm. and that many of those who otherwise would not want to remove the judges because it's not been brought to their attention may just not turn the ballot over and answer those questions.
So physically on the ballot, this is on the back side of the ballot, mm-hmm. and I've never been a ballot counter, but often maybe some of those questions that you just don't know about, what, they're left blank, and they don't count for either side, do they?
Right, right. Angry people vote. And in this particular case, you've got people angry with a particular decision of this court. The argument on the other side is you shouldn't get rid of them for that reason, for a particular decision. But they're focused on a particular decision and angry about it, and they want to take it out on these particular justices. The other side's focusing on the whole idea of an independent judiciary. That's a much vaguer, more nebulous, more abstract idea. It's hard to get impassioned about that for a lot of people.
So what's the chances of success to unseat these judges, Rachel Caulfield?
Well, I haven't seen any polling on this. I don't know from a statewide basis. I don't know how the campaign is doing right now. They've run internal polls. Clearly, some of those numbers have been released, but the numbers that have been released, I don't think give us a clear picture of what we can expect in November. I do think voter roll-off, where somebody votes for the top of the ticket races and doesn't participate in other races, in the case of judicial retention elections, it's as high as 40% or 50%. So this is a real issue on these retention votes. And I think one of the goals right now of Joy Corning and Sally Peterson is to start to educate people about what these races are and the need to participate.
Okay, very quickly, we have just a couple minutes together, a couple of little threads I want to have you address here in our political discussion today. Redistricting, that's coming to Iowa. The census we participated in will show that we don't have sufficient numbers in the state to maintain the congressional seats that we have. What's going to happen? When is it going to happen? How is it going to happen? Professor Moyer.
Well, it's going to happen, I guess, after this election and before the next election. And there will be a redistricting, I guess, body that puts together a proposal, which I believe the legislature has to then approve. And we're going to lose a congressional seat. I don't think we have any sense yet of which seat or what the boundaries of the new congressional districts are going to be. But one of our congressmen is not going to be a congressman.
Okay. Professor Goldford, you look into this issue, I know.
We lost a seat. We went from 6 seats to 5 after the 1990 census. We held constant at 5 after the 2000 census. Now we'll go to 4. The commission has got to respect boundary lines of counties and has got to put the same number of people in each of those 4 districts. And that's tough when you consider how thin the population gets the further west you move in Iowa.
We have about a minute left, but tell us the process for combining a district? Is that a partisan system that we have here in Iowa, or distinctly nonpartisan?
Not really in Iowa. And in fact, a lot of people in other states always call and ask about Iowa's system because they like it. It's a nonpartisan commission. They make a recommendation. The legislature votes up or down on it. If they vote down, the commission comes up with a second recommendation. If the legislature votes that down, then I believe the legislature actually gets its hands in it. But we don't have the overt gerrymandering, at least in the initial stages, that you see in other states.
So, and actually the vast majority of states are more partisan in
right.
the way that they redistrict, aren't they? You get these strange-looking districts all over the place.
I mean, I think this is a real strength that Iowa has. And if more states were to do this, I think we would have less of the vicious partisanship that we have in D.C.
Okay. Our hour has come to an end. I've really enjoyed being with the three of you, Wayne Moyer with us from Grinnell College, and then also from Drake University. We have Dennis Goldford and Rachel Caulfield. Thank you. Thank you very much for making the time for us, coming in to give us some of your expertise as we looked at the politics for today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Exchange is produced by Alex Hoyer and Catherine Perkins, and technical support today from John Pemble. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. We always welcome your comments and questions about this program. Contact us anytime, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. I want to remind you once again that President Obama's backyard discussion held this morning in Des Moines will be heard 1 hour from now at 2 p.m. here on Iowa Public Radio. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.